You're listening to Tech Talk Radio in your backyard and worldwide on the pod.
Every once in a while, a revolutionary product comes along that changes everything.
It's the first time that Apple have actually decided to tell people about something that they're developing.
High-speed broadband. Let's just make sure that we can get it in Australia this year, not next.
The three main spamming countries are the United States, China, and South Korea.
And I've got some residual powers.
Sounds like something out of Harry Potter.
Senator Coonan, the voice of reason.
There's a couple of systems on a gantry that's actually based on a military missile tracking system.
You put the date on ePray, and you get a whole service just on
How does it go?
IE7, you were having trouble installing it because you had a genuine copy of Windows that wouldn't validate properly. What did you have to do to get past that?
Built a new machine.
But how hard can it be?
Well, it's not hard at all.
At the end of the day, the photography is all about the person's eye and what they see.
If you find something that's inappropriate about your child, you need to do something about it because it will not go away.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Tech Talk Radio. I'm your host, Andrew McComb. As consumers of technology, or any commodity for that matter, we place a certain amount of trust in the hands of manufacturers or service providers. Technical specifications aside, we as consumers place a great deal of weight on the brand name behind whatever it is that we're buying. But at what price? Brand names are everything. Recently on Tech Talk Radio, we spoke of the great brands of 2008, of which Google, Microsoft, and Apple were amongst the top 10 global brands. So do we assume that just because these guys are on top of the ladder, that they won't sell us a dodgy product? In today's cutthroat world of retailing, companies need to maintain good margins on products. When that margin is threatened by competitors and cheap imitation copies of products from, say, China and Asia, don't you think the marketing departments of said companies would do anything to improve the sales and hence the company's bottom line? Or what about just unscrupulous companies that put sales before customers? We're not immune from this sort of corporate mischief in Australia either. Recently, what was once a trusted and respected Australian IT company betrayed local consumers by saying that their service was everywhere you needed it, when according to the ACCC, it wasn't. The Federal Court agreed with the ACCC and found that the company's claims were misleading. This week, the mail order computer company Dell was found guilty in an American court of false advertising and fraud. According to the court, the company engaged in abusive debt collection practices, misled consumers with financial terms for which they'd qualified, and failed to provide consumers with promised rebates. The case arose after hundreds of complaints about Dell and its financial arm, Dell Financial Services. As a result, Dell now faces the prospect of a huge damages claim. So what motivates the large corporate players to deceive and lie to consumers, the people that keep them in business? Is it the nature of just a few rotten apples in the marketing bunch? Are they just innocent mistakes by ill-informed individuals? Or are the company executives fully aware of their actions, knowing full well that they're stretching the truth? Take that into consideration when upgrading or buying your next gadget. After all, once a company blots its copybook, what's to say that they're not going to do it again?
This week on Tech Talk Radio,
we continue our chat with Rico Malvar from Microsoft Research in the United States. Adam turns his attention to the slow take-up of Blu-ray. Mr. Gates promises multi-touch Windows 7. And is it the end of an era for papered airline tickets? First up, here's the latest happenings from the Tech Talk Radio news desk with Graham Callaghan.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, the ACCC accidentally discloses Google's criticism of eBay. Microsoft Vista is not a failure, says Steve Ballmer. The first domestic Blu-ray disc recorder hits Australian shores. An Adobe Flash Player exploit redirects victims to malware-infected servers. And a new game for the Nintendo DS helps smokers kick the habit. Welcome to Tech Talk News. The Australian Competition and Consumer Commission last week accidentally disclosed that Google is the anonymous source of a submission that is highly critical of eBay's PayPal exclusivity proposal. The 38-page submission is critical of eBay's plan, which Google has described as anti-competitive. A disgruntled eBay user linked the anonymous submission on the ACCC's website with Google after finding hidden metadata in the downloaded PDF document. Metadata is additional information usually contained in the contents of a file, and in this case disclosed that the original file name contained the words Submission by Google. The PDF was removed from the ACCC's website a few hours after the discovery, then returned later without the incriminating metadata. The submission was made by Google in response to eBay's application to grant it immunity from prosecution under the Trade Practices Act ahead of the PayPal exclusivity changes. The ACCC's response to eBay's request is being closely watched around the world, especially given that eBay Australia is being used as a guinea pig for the change to PayPal only. The plan is not popular with many eBay users because the auction company extracts a fee for use of the PayPal system in addition to auction fees. Steve Ballmer has lashed out at critics of Microsoft Vista at the D6 All Things Digital conference in San Diego last week. Microsoft heavyweights Bill Gates and Steve Ballmer answered many questions at the conference, with a defensive Ballmer saying that Vista is not a failure and evading questions about the failed merger between Microsoft and Yahoo. Microsoft also previewed Windows 7 at the conference, which CEO Bill Gates said is the beginning of an era of computing based on a new hierarchy of input systems. Mr. Gates demonstrated multi-touch technology as a fundamental part of the new operating system, similar to that already used in Apple's iPhone. The new Windows 7 operating system is expected to be released in late 2009. The first consumer Blu-ray disc player capable of recording free-to-air, high-definition broadcasts will arrive in Australia next month. Panasonic's DMR BW500 is believed to be the first consumer Blu-ray disc recorder capable of recording 1080p digital high-definition television with removable media. Australia is also the first country outside of Japan to receive the technology, ahead of overseas markets including the United States and Europe. The new Panasonic machine will handle single-layer 25GB and dual-layer 50GB Blu-ray discs and comes with a 500GB hard drive and twin high-definition tuners. Other features include an HDMI 1.3 output, an inbuilt SD memory card slot, and a built-in USB port which lets users display photos or play MP3 files from any USB memory stick. The DMR BW500 will retail in Australia for $2,199. Panasonic's product announcement comes only 3 months after the so-called format war was declared officially over by consumer electronics experts, with HD DVD supporters being vanquished by Blu-ray manufacturers and their allies like Panasonic. Most regarded the format war as over when Toshiba made a statement in February this year saying it would no longer develop, manufacture or market HD DVD players and recorders. A reported exploit for Adobe's Flash Player has caused confusion among both IT experts and users. First reported as a zero-day exploit, the independent online security firm Security Focus later revised their claim when it was realized that the issue was almost identical to an earlier issue that has already been fixed in the very latest version of Flash. It has been reported, however, that many malicious websites are exploiting the flaw and that users are still vulnerable unless they are using the latest version. Adobe acknowledged the issue last week and encouraged users to upgrade their Flash players to version 9.0.124. Users should visit the Flash page at adobe.com to update their plugins. However, you must do this with each different web browser you use, even on the same computer. And finally, a new game for the Nintendo DS could help smokers to kick their nicotine addiction. The game, expected to go on sale in November, is being manufactured for the interactive touchscreen games console by Ubisoft. The so-called smoking cessation game asks players to enter a brief personal smoking history and choose a personal coach to guide them through the process of quitting. 15 mini-games then help players to dispel illusions about nicotine addiction, and players can track their progress in kicking the habit using the Path to Freedom meter. Ubisoft said in a press release that the player experiences a truly interactive engagement with the game, through which he or she learns that it can actually be enjoyable to quit smoking. Tech Talk News was compiled by Dr. Ron. I'm Graham Callaghan, and that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
Mars got invaded from Earth today.
The exciting stuff about the way it's landed is it's done a soft landing using thrusters.
Let's talk about Microsoft. They've got into the cashback deal. Everyone's getting cashbacks these days.
In lieu of actually having better search technology.
Oh, well, cynical.
Spade to spade.
Is that not a fair call?
If you're in the Northern Territory, consider yourself exceptionally lucky if you're hearing our podcast or listening to us at all.
Is it only Queenslanders that fall for this?
Well,
is it?
Yes, it is.
Is that what this report says?
Dr. Ron, you sent me a very interesting spam the other day.
That was bizarre, wasn't it?
I'm a male.
I can only do one thing at a time.
I tend to do both at once.
If you're driving along, don't text while you're driving. It's bad for your health.
I've been taken out to dinner for my wedding anniversary, listening to some computer nerds talk on the radio.
Just because you've written a new post doesn't mean it's worth submitting to a social media site.
Is it a scam?
Is it
he
a
asks
scam?
Knowingly.
Computer stuff sucks a lot of power out of the wall.
Yeah.
What are you saying?
Yeah, it's necessary. Yeah.
Vote one, global warming.
That's right.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Shoot.
The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
And here we are again, yet another evening, another day, wherever you might be listening to us. Welcome. This is Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. Sitting across in front of me today, the three wise men. And we've got a visitor in the studio, but we'll talk about that later. Graham, good evening. How are you?
Good, Andrew. How are you?
Look, can't complain. It's been so hectic today. Everything. We could do the whole show in what happened today in the technology world. I don't know whether you've been watching the emails. Dr. Ron.
I'm good, but I'm a bit sad because I left my favourite headphones at home.
So do you want us to talk louder?
I'm a grumpy Dr. Ron.
A grumpy
now.
Dr.
Yes,
Ron.
I'm kicking myself. How are you, Andrew?
And I have to sit next to him. That's no good at all.
Oh, dear, JD. Sorry, just move around the bench a bit and you'll be out of flack's way, I guess. So.
Very good.
Anyway, what a fantastic day it's been today. Well, everything that could possibly wanted to happen has happened, both professionally, both technologically, absolutely everything.
In a good way or a bad way?
Oh, I think so. Just the news in the IT news today has been phenomenal. We'll touch all on that fairly shortly, but... On a professional scale, our television program started on the Nine Network today, which is alive and cooking. Go and have a look at that wherever you are around Australia.
That's exciting.
It was exciting. Inundated with emails already. It's unbelievable. So, it's just been really good. So what's been happening in the world today, boys? Shall we start off with the hologram? Did you see the hologram?
I heard all about the hologram.
The holo projection.
Yeah, the hologram. Is it smoke and mirrors or what with Telstra?
You know, they like it.
There's two schools of thought. There's the press release that you can actually see on the Telstra website, and there's some cynical writers. I love reading some of these tech writers out there. They're worse than us. They're very cynical.
Now, I saw a photograph which had like virtually a full size. Person standing on a stage,
like something out of Star Trek.
Same size as the real person beside it.
Yeah,
and you know I wasn't sure whether I was looking at something that had been photoshopped or whether it was a.
I think holograms, you have to be there. I don't think that quite worked too well on television or
it still
radio.
It looked very convincing in the photograph.
It still looked a bit two-dimensional, though, even though they claim it was three-dimensional.
The news article that I read said Telstra has used the latest high-speed broadband technology to transmit an image of its chief technology officer in real time. Thought that's a really good use of NextG, so the network will support holographic communication.
What was done on NextG, was it?
Oh, well, it's on the latest high-speed broadband technology.
Oh,
it must
okay.
be. So I was quite impressed. I didn't realise that the pipes were that wide.
Yeah, it said in an Australian first, Telstra just recently showed a hologram to beam its chief technology officer, Dr. Hugh Bardlow, live into Adelaide from Melbourne to talk to a major function. He was there for 15 minutes, virtually. It's a bit like you, Dr. Ryan, virtual. Virtually. He was there. But nonetheless, it was interesting. There's links off the Telstra website sort of showing what technology that they used for it and all that sort of stuff. So
I'll be impressed when they can do it in two directions because you didn't actually get to see the studio he was standing in and what was surrounding him at the time.
Yeah, why? Are you cynical? What do you think was there?
Well, you know, if you look at the Star Trek, Star Wars-esque holograms, you've got a person at each end. So, you know, Darth Vader appears on one hologram and the evil Lord appears on the other one. So this is all sort of one-ended, isn't it?
Yes. Well, did they interact? Did they chat and talk in real time or was it staged?
I believe it was.
Did they take questions from the auditorium?
Yeah, look, I wasn't there, obviously, but reading their reports, it looks like he fielded questions from the audience, and there's some description about him having a plasma screen at his end so he could see what was going on in the auditorium. So.
Well, if you have a look on the website, you can see a link that goes to the Musen, if I'm pronouncing this correctly, the Musen Eyeliner, I think it is, system. And that's the organisation that actually did the projection. I don't wonder if they projected it onto, but yeah, it's quite interesting. Certainly generated a lot of interesting press around for the wrong reasons.
4 to 5 years away, the technology. Telstra reckon?
You reckon?
Yeah, for the consumer. That's great.
Absolutely. Anyway, correspondence. I've got some here. Steve Hudson sent us an email. Like the show, been listening for a few years on the podcast because we poor sods in Sydney don't have a live broadcast. Well, what can I say? Yes, and he's come on with a couple of observations. For years, I've experimented with voice recognition on the PC, and it's always been a waste of time because the error rate. There has always been limited readback voices on Windows, and the default male voice has always sounded extremely fake and really annoying. I've always assumed that Microsoft designed it the way that a computer-generated voice. So there you go. And he's also given us some stuff about until now. Don't take this the wrong way, but after your interview with the Microsoft guy, Rico, last week, I now know whose voice they've used.
He thinks the male Microsoft voice is Rico.
Yeah, because Rico does sound very long distant and all that. But I can assure you it was...
Might have just been our phone patch.
No, it wasn't too bad, actually. But yeah, no, that's how it sounded. So anyway, I got part two of Rico on this evening. Now, Dr. Ron, have you got some...
I've got lots.
Okay.
I've always got lots.
I know.
We've set up a new TikTok Radio Facebook group.
Man here with a TikTok. Have you?
Yes, that's exciting.
Man here with a TikTok Radio beanie cap on. I've never seen those before. Where'd you get them cap? From? Which shop did you get that at?
You can buy them. You can just buy them on the internet now.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Okay.
Taking over the world we are. Now, yeah, you can go to Facebook and you can search for TikTok Radio in the groups and join our group. That would be exciting.
That would mean I need to sign up to Facebook.
Oh, you don't have to if you don't want to, JD, but if you're already a user, then you can. We've got new forum users. Hello to Jeremy O in Melbourne, who joined last week. Also had some follow-up from... Remember our discussion with Michael Cremien about the Sony PlayStation 3?
Yes.
And we asked, did it have surround sound? The answer is yes, the PS3 can output HDMI video and audio. And optical audio. Hop onto YouTube and search for PS3 surround sound setup. I've got in my notes here. You can see what people are doing all over the world with their PS3s.
I think it probably would also depend on the game supporting surround sound as well. So some games probably support it and others don't.
Good point. But the hardware does, apparently.
It probably supports it off your Blu-ray disc as well.
Well, I think that's where it's going to come into its own, isn't it? When people are using it as part of their home cinema setup.
Yeah.
We've got a question from a listener here. David says, hi, guys. Hi, David. Many times you correctly advise against clicking to open spam email. Does this mean that the email window preview pane should not be used? Well, that's a good question from David. So he's talking about preview panes that you have in...
It depends on what type of antivirus, anti-spam thing you're running. But if you weren't running antivirus, anti-spam, I'd be inclined not to run it in the preview mode for that very reason.
Because regardless of whether you open the message, the program itself's opening the message, isn't it? And displaying it in the preview pane.
It's another one of these issues where ease of use and functionality pushes in one direction and security pushes in the other.
Mm.
So it depends on how much of a, you know, it is a slight extra risk. It does draw it up. It does, you know, if it's an HTML email, it uses Internet Explorer to draw up the page.
So in essence, you've pulled it down off the web server where it's been living, and any potential executable code that's on that same page could also be executed.
It also depends what... email client you're using. So if you're using Outlook or Outlook Express, you might get that sort of behavior where if there's an embedded image in the email, it will pull it down off the foreign server, and that might expose you to being identified or, you know, someone knowing that you've opened the email or something like that. Other email clients like Thunderbird might act in a more secure way, and I know that mine just refuses point blank to open any images that are embedded in emails.
That's true.
Do you choose that deliberately?
Yeah.
Why?
Because it's safer.
Yeah, you reckon you'll get something via a nasty something in a JPEG or something, do you?
Yeah, and it's
just all those funny pictures you keep getting that you're sick of.
Well, it's the traceability factor, particularly for spam. One of the things that the spammers really want to know is, did you receive the message or did it go astray? Did anyone actually look at this in the end?
Oh, yeah, they can see
and
on their
web server. And what they do is they embed an image in it that's got a unique number as its name. And then when you open up the email, it goes and retrieves that image, and they know that you personally, you know, Andrew McCollum, has opened up that email.
Oh.
So...
scary.
Yeah, so that's why I leave that feature turned off. But then again, it breaks things like the Tech Talk Radio mail out. So
it does. You walk a fine line, don't you?
You do, yeah. So there's always this conflict between, you know, a bit of extra functionality, a bit less security. But, you know, you've got to sort of choose.
Hopefully that answers your question. Yeah.
That's a good question, David.
It was very good.
I've got one more as well from Simon. A question about grey imports. Simon asks, this past week...
I've heard about these before.
Yeah, I've been investigating the purchase of a new phone, looking on eBay and online stores. It appears almost impossible to find genuine Australian stock. Many sellers state they have local stock, but on further investigation, they have their own warranty service indicating they've sourced the stock overseas. Mm. The savings can well be over $100, so the question is whether grey imports are worth the risk.
Yeah, good question.
Mm. Mm. Grey imports means that instead of buying it through the correct supply chain for whatever, you know, it might be a Sony Ericsson phone in this case, buying it through the Sony Ericsson supply chain, they've gone and bought it in a different market, say in Asia somewhere, and then imported into Australia themselves, so that if you take the phone back to Sony Ericsson under warranty and say, you know, I bought this in Australia and it's broken, they'll say, no, well, this
it's not an Australian
this
phone.
This wasn't for sale in Australia, so yeah, we can't help you with fixing it.
There are some companies like my favourite company that actually provide worldwide warranty. So if you've got a product like that,
I'm going to talk about your favourite company and their warranty in just a minute.
So if you've got a product like that, and there's a couple of companies that offer that, then you're pretty well safe for it no matter where you buy it.
I've done that exact thing with Sony Ericsson. I've been overseas in Singapore.
Yep.
And latest and greatest Sony Ericsson PDA phone was there at the time. I thought, you've got to have one of them, and bought it and brought it back here. And it worked fine. Never needed warranty support.
So you didn't end up taking it back to the Sony.
But the issue always was in the back of my mind. If there was a problem with the phone, what would Sony Ericsson locally have to say about it?
Yeah, they might say, no, this phone was never for use in Australia. It's unsupported.
Take it back to Singapore.
Bad luck, yeah. Send it back to Singapore where you bought it for repair.
Apple, great warranty service department that they have. A colleague of mine who sits in the very opposite, directly opposite me in the office, to be precisely, has an Apple notebook, which under warranty was sent back to the said warranty place where you take said notebooks back to when warranty is required. He's now been without it for 12 weeks.
Excellent. Was that a reseller?
I can't answer that question. I'm not familiar, but he took it back to the place where it was to be done under warranty. And he's since been told that the reason why it's taken so long is that Apple will not ship spare parts until the faulty parts are returned to Apple, then they then ship the new parts. So there's got to be places around town, repair places, which have got, you know, bits of Mac sitting everywhere waiting for other bits to be returned. And that's been the...
So the service center's got to take the thing apart, pull out the Foley part, send it all the way to America,
yep.
Get it approved, get them to send it back.
Yep.
And then, yeah,
yep.
That's
what I've been told. It's hearsay. So take on board what you want on that. But I just found that amazing when we were talking about it in
You'd
the office
today.
You'd
think that an authorised service centre would have
would
the...
Would carry parts for those sort of things.
And would have the authority to be able to test the part themselves and say, yep, this is faulty, it needs replacing, rather than have to send it back to some...
Which comes down to the reseller. And I haven't actually had to have an Apple product under warranty repaired for a while.
Oh, you're the one.
Very long time. Yeah, I'm the one. That's because I keep on buying old stuff, and the old stuff's much better.
Yeah, I heard there was someone out there. Sorry.
But if you... The old Apple warranty system, which I assume is still around, you used to be able to contact Apple directly. They'd give you a shipping number and you could actually ship it straight back to Apple to get repaired rather than go through a reseller who then has to deal with Apple to get spare parts.
But when you say ship it back to Apple, you mean ship it back to the US?
No, Sydney.
Okay.
Well, that's all good and fine, really.
That's even worse if it's gone back to Sydney and it's got that sort of downtime, isn't it? You think, if it had to go somewhere in the US, then, yeah, maybe it's going to take a few extra weeks. But just to Sydney?
Yeah, but then the part has to go back to Sydney to, yeah.
That's crazy stuff, isn't it?
It is. It's crazy.
Anyway, I just thought I'd air that. I found that amazing in respect to warranty. I know when...
What was the part, do you know? Was it something obscure or something...
Probably the whole motherboard.
It was, actually. It was the motherboard and the enter key. These G4 notebook things, the keys pop off
the any key, yeah.
Yeah, that one there. Yeah, as Homer says. I just thought I'd mention that because I thought that was... Anyway, what do you expect? There's been a lot of, as we mentioned in my opening piece today, skullduggery going on in the telecommunications industry. And I was in the news today, I thought, what are we breeding here with all these different manufacturers and things like that? The supplier of Soul, well, I don't know, have you heard of Soul Communications? They were...
you've got to have Soul.
Yeah, they were bought out recently by TPG.
Yeah.
And Kath Hart, who writes for the Australian IT, opened a piece about them like this. They seek him there. They seek him here. They seek him there. His staff, associates and reporters seem to seek him everywhere. After weeks of trying to establish whether mid-tiered telco Soul is in cash flow heaven or management hell, some telco types have begun to liken the company's new boss, David Teo, to none other than the Scarlet Pimpernel.
Oh.
Now, that's the type of people running these telcos at the moment. Does it make you wonder why things aren't too flash in certain areas? So,
What's happening with them at the moment? No one knows.
I'm not sure, but Seoul was in a lot of trouble there for a while to the point where they looked like they were going to disappear, but I think these TPG came in and bought them.
They've disappeared into TPG. Yeah.
There's threatening court cases from some of their resellers and distributors saying that they're not getting their commissions and they're going to have to go out of business, so they're seeking restitution. And
well, they had a massive marketing campaign here not so long ago. Or maybe it's still running.
They still do.
Spent a lot of money on TV.
Lots
ads
of prime
time
TV commercials.
Yeah.
I'm still trying to find another article because there was another gentleman in the same industry. Here we go. I found it. Also today, mobile phones. You know, these telecommunications companies. Less than 2 years after investigating a stock market listing, a mobile phone retail chain chaired by member of the Communications Minister Stephen Conroy's expert broadband panel has been found by the federal court to have engaged in calculated dishonesty and counter and continuing deceit by withholding commission payments to its franchisees.
That was all phones, wasn't it?
Oh, you got it. Well, you've been reading the papers. What is it with these telecommunications companies and trying to do the dodgy? Like, is margins just that sort of small in this game?
They probably are pretty tight, their margins.
And is that why they're trying to do everything they can to hang on to every shekel that they can?
Maybe.
The more I sort of hear about this industry, the more dubious it sort of becomes. And that's at all ends of the playing field, from the small guys to the big guys. They're all...
I think the way they work is that they buy up in bulk. They buy up circuit time or call minutes. So they might say to the person up the stream from them, if they're going to be a Telstra reseller or a Vodafone reseller, yeah, we're going to buy 500,000 call minutes from you this week and we want a good price, please.
Is that how it works?
I think that's how they make their money, yeah. And they buy up in bulk, the same way that that it's done for landlines and other services. So but there wouldn't be much margin in it, though. No.
Okay. China in a microchip Olympic crackdown. Spectators at the Beijing Olympic opening ceremony, which is going to potentially include Mr. Rudd, our Prime Minister, will be subject to unprecedented security checks to head off any embarrassing protests against the Chinese government. Chinese Olympic organisers have announced that everyone attending the opening ceremony
is going to be microchipped.
Basically, you took the words right out of my mouth.
You're not serious.
Which begins on the 8th of August the 8th at 8 p.m. will have their tickets embedded with a microchip that will contain their photograph, passport details, address, email address, and telephone number.
So they're only microchipping the tickets, not the people. So we're not going to be able to print up our own fake Olympics tickets.
They are in the country.
That's
which
not
is...
really in the Chinese spirit of the way of doing things, is it?
Absolutely.
No spam
cheap,
at
cheap fake BeijingOlympics.com.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure you can reverse engineer the chip, but when you walk through the gantry to get into the airport and the train station and you try to visit the wrong place.
Yes, there'll be these officials following you. It'd be a bit like, did you have the blue tablet or the red tablet?
Yes. This is why we need microchips in people, because it'd avoid all this sort of problem, them having to roll out their own new ticket system and have all this alarmist news appearing in the media. We just
seen a film like that with Tom Cruise, haven't I?
Yeah.
It was a Minority Report or something like that.
Might have been. Yeah.
Anyway, they've
started having that guy we were talking about a few months ago that chipped himself so he could open his front
door.
Yeah, he's on the right track. It's a lot to be said, I reckon.
Yes, at birth, they'll just, what do you call them? Medical people? What's the term?
Subcutaneous.
That's the one. I actually said that word on the
subcutaneous implant.
I said that word on the ABC the other day. They're very impressed.
Were they?
Anyway, before we go to the break, we should do something that's on the rundown. Bill Gates has promised multi-touch Windows in 7. Let me start again. Multi-touch Windows 7.
Yeah, look over here. Look over here. Don't look at Vista. Look over here.
Yeah, exactly. We've bypassed Vista completely. Yeah. We've gone to the next operating system.
And we'll forget that somebody's introduced it into a commercial product already.
Yeah, could be. Windows 7, the successor to the much-criticised Windows Vista, will come with multi-touch features that Microsoft chairman Mr. Bill Gates predicts will ultimately replace the mouse.
Oh, it's good.
I was about to ask, does that mean I'm going to need two mouses? One to stretch things out or whatever?
Yeah, to click and drag and stretch, you will.
Use your fingers.
But somebody already does that on a
I know, take a lead from the other manufacturer who's doing that, flicking and
It's been done before.
Yeah. Microsoft are catching up again.
Good on them.
Due for release in 2010, 2011, 2012 and 2013, Windows 7 will come with a touchscreen interface that will allow users, it says 2010, that will allow users to enlarge and shrink photos, trace routes on maps, paint pictures on even play the piano.
Yes, because one of the most important things I do on my PC in the course of my normal working day is resizing photographs.
Yeah. Oh. What I want to know is, will Windows 7 still come with paint?
Yeah, it'd have to.
Finger paint.
What I want to know seriously is, we can buy generic touch screens, can't we? We can buy Yeah,
well, you can even put a film over an existing monitor and stuff.
Yeah, that's all right.
But so, the trick is the multi-touch, though, having more than one point.
Yeah, and my mind immediately leapt to the thought, are we going to have to buy proprietary Microsoft hardware to use this feature in Windows 7, or is it going to be able to be adapted to work with generic touchscreen technology?
Microsoft haven't normally gone down the generic hardware
they haven't.
Pathway. No, my suspicion is that, you're going to have to buy a multi-touch screen to use the multi-touch features. Your single-touch screens that you're using now won't support multi-touch.
But manufacturers will start to produce such screens.
Yep.
Before we go to the break, Dr. Ron, what's going on with eBay and your mum? You were telling me this on the phone. It was a very hilarious sort of mention the war story.
Oh, no.
Is this a sort of generation gap?
I'm selling... there's another story, actually, about a lady who was selling her baby on eBay. We might get to that a bit later. That was almost an odd spot. It was an odd spot candidate. no, I'm not selling my mother on eBay, but she was trying to buy things on eBay, and she was complaining that if she waited until there was a minute left to run on an auction, and then she went in there and tried to... put in a quick bid, and the page actually took 40 or 50 seconds to load, that she missed out.
Yep. You need a sniping program.
Oh, you do need a sniping program. I didn't actually mention that
to her. What's a sniping program for those who don't know?
First of all, let me say, if you're going to leave auctions to the very, very last minute, you just need to be aware that if your internet connection is slow or eBay is momentarily unusually busy and you miss out, then you're going to miss out. You really just need to put on what you expect to pay or what you expect is a reasonable amount to pay, put that on and let it run, the course of the auction.
And people do that anyway, because that's how the fast bid comes back at you. If you underprice and you get the next one back, it's because, let's say if someone said, I'm prepared to pay $100 for this, and your mum's going, oh, look, it's only 50, I'll put 60 on it. Well, it's going to be counteracted with 65 by the automatic Microsoft bidder on the other person's behalf.
Exactly. What JD was talking about is sniping programs.
Now, what's a sniping program?
Well, there are third-party sites which will offer this sort of a function, so it's automated. So
they sit on roofs with guns, do they?
Well, they do. They sit on the eBay auctions and they watch them down to the second, and they say, what are you prepared to pay? And they will put bids in on your behalf at the 30-second mark, at the 15-second mark, at the 10-second mark to run.
You have to give them your account details, whereas if you get something on your own machine, I use a little JavaScript called JBidWatcher, I think it's called, and therefore I don't have to give away my passwords and account details to a third party. I don't like
you have
doing
to
that.
Type it into a third party program, so you still don't know what that program's going to do with it. Might send it off to somebody else.
True, except it's open source and there's lots of feedback and
you're pretty comfortable with it.
If it's out in the open, it's a good traditionally. Yes.
And so you can set on this particular application when you want it to bid. So it can be an hour out if you really want to, or in my case, 5 seconds away. I think, I do a fair bit of online purchasing for my Macintosh collection, which is just getting a bit out of control at the moment. But what I find is
at the moment,
for the last decade or so, what I find is that people aren't really putting those. Yes, I have.
Yes.
The big auction bids in early. They're doing it very, very late. And I certainly do that. I put in a sniping bid at the end that's as much as I can afford so that I haven't boosted the price too early.
Do you have to pay to use these third-party sniping applications?
The one I've got, no.
Open source. It'd be free, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I think there's some which are, it's all web-based and you do it on using the web.
Were you using somebody else's product?
Yeah, you may have to pay for those. I'm not entirely sure. Let us know, though, if you've used such a service. Feedback at techtalkradio.com.au.
GPS units giving dodgy directions. Now,
oh,
this is just because we can. Motorists are being led astray by high-tech GPS devices as Victoria police are forced to rescue motorists ending up on out-of-the-way country
track. Okay, Graham's got a migraine.
Listen up, people. Okay, everybody out there, when you own a GPS, when you switch on your GPS, you do not switch off your brain. If the GPS tells you to turn left onto the train tracks, don't do it. If the GPS tells you to turn right at Camberwell Junction, where there's no right turns, for those people who don't know, don't do it. Just do something safe, drive straight ahead, follow the traffic directions.
Yeah. Hey, that explains all the people on the freeway that cut from the right-hand lane right across to the left-hand lane to exit.
Yeah, because
I always thought they were just idiots, but they're actually following their
GPS. They're GPS-enabled idiots.
Don't cross 18 lanes of traffic to get off the freeway at the right exit. Just keep going. Your GPS will recalculate a new way to get to where you're going perfectly safely without driving down the train tracks or falling off a cliff or getting lost or turning right at Camberwell Junction.
Or driving over a bridge that's not there.
That's right. Just, bit of common sense, people, please.
Graham, have we hit a heart a personal note here or something? You're very passionate about this.
We might have, yeah.
Okay.
I'll calm down now.
Okay, good. Police urge drivers not to turf out old-fashioned maps and more rely on the GPS system to find their way. A member stationed in Bright in Victoria's Alpine District says motorists are becoming lost after blindly following their directions. And up in the sky country of Victoria, it's probably not a good idea because there's some fairly steep and inhospitable tracks up in that part of the world. They went on to say that they had to help two motorists in the past 6 weeks who ended up on roads suited for four-wheel drive vehicles, with the most recent incident leaving a family with a young child stranded on a slippery hill in Tea Tree Range. There you go. Bright Senior Sergeant Doug Incoles said GPS directed drivers on the quickest possible route are not the safest particular route. We are going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to have part two of our discussion with Rico Malva, who runs the Microsoft's development department over there. We heard part one last week, so feel free to download or listen to last week's podcast to hear the beginning of this. And as we've some of our emails and correspondence have alluded to this evening, there was a question about the synthetic voice of Microsoft, but no, it's not Rico. But anyway, that's the tyranny.
It's not. Do you know it's not?
It's not. It's the tyranny of distance. There's something between the telephone lines from one side of the world to the other. But nonetheless, we'll pick up with that conversation after this.
Compelling.
Every once in a while, a revolutionary product comes along that changes everything.
Judicious.
The question is really whether young people particularly are addicted to being connected to other people all the time.
Historical.
Today is a very important day in Australia's history. This is the day, the 6th of October, 2006, that life in Australia will be changed forever.
Caring.
I know as a parent, I would often say to my children, you've just spoken to this person for 8 hours at school, how can you sit online and chat to them for another 5 hours?
You heard of road rage? What about web rage?
They should be wearing a mask and carrying a gun.
Relations between Telstra and the federal government have been extremely strained almost from the moment Sol Trujillo became chief executive.
Optus had, again, had quite a good quarter, but its 3G service is very low profile at the moment.
And the Queen's got an iPod.
Betty's got one.
Yeah.
Wonder what she listens to. She'll probably listen to us.
An unexpectedly high number of voters swamped the system. Well, what did they expect?
Controversial.
Less attention is paid to the equally interesting question, should journalists blog?
Magical.
And I've got some residual powers.
Ambitious.
High-speed broadband, it's available in most of Asia as well as being in the rest of the world. Let's just make sure that we can get it in Australia this year, not next.
Religion.
Talking of the Roman Catholics, I have been on Vatican Radio.
Comedy.
You put the date on E-Pray, it goes blah, 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 and you get a whole service. Just on.
How does it go?
It goes blah, 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 blah.
Insightful, entertaining and informative. Tech Talk Radio. More than just technology.
It's a strictly rehearsed and finely polished program.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. Last week we heard part one of our interview with Rico Malva, the head of research for Microsoft in the United States. So we'll pick up where we left off, talking to Rico about how we're going to interact with devices of the future and the presentation of the information contained within.
Besides the interaction, there is also how we're going to present information to you in new ways that will allow you navigation through information in a very cool way. For example, we have this thing called Worldwide Telescope that it's not released yet, but it will be soon, late spring or summer. And we already have a site that is worldwidetelescope.org. And the idea is that you're probably familiar with Live Local, for example, where you can see a satellite picture of a city and then you can navigate through it, right? So you can move around to the left, to the right, and zoom. Imagine that through the whole universe. So now you navigate through the galaxies and with zoomable interfaces, and you can zoom into the Earth and then see the Earth, or you can get close to a galaxy. And with an additional ability of recording a journey that you've made through the universe and then save that to a friend. So almost as if you're playing around the universe and you visited it in a particular way, and then that journey you can send a link to your friend, and then they can see your experience and go through the same pathways you've gone. And you have the whole universe in front of you. So it's really a very cool experience.
I could imagine for education it'd be fantastic. How real time would that be? Like, would you be able to see, obviously the space moves relatively slowly, but would you be able to watch stellar experiences, a supernova exploding or a comet traveling through the universe and see where it is in relatively real time? Is that sort of the technology where we're aiming to be?
That would be super cool. That's not what we can do today. Today, what we're basically doing is picking up data from many different kinds of astronomic databases, from observatories and other places and telescopes, and putting them together and seamlessly allowing you to navigate from one to the other. But in the future, once we have enough connections with real data, for example, from an observatory in particular, yes, we could actually do that. Probably not to the entire universe, because we actually don't have data feeds for that, but on a particular telescope to which we can have a live feed, sure, we could provide to you exactly that kind of experience. We can't do that today, but we could probably do in the future.
The benefit of that would definitely be the fact that if you can't see it on one side of the world, you could see it on the other side of the world just by logging in and searching through the worldwide telescope. I think that would be a fantastic educational experience for everybody. Rico, let's talk about data storage too. This has traditionally been a little bit restrictive, if for no other reasons than physical limitations of storage devices and even the quantity of records being stored. Some companies have realized that knowledge is power. So how will we be storing our data in the future? And will there be any limits to how much we can store and access at any one point in time?
Well, that's a good point. And in fact, everybody's drowning in data. And one of the problems we run to is that the capacity of the hard disk keep increasing. And today you buy a new computer, let's say a new laptop computer, you get 100 gigabytes of hard disk in it. And unless you're filling it all with movies, which does happen, of course, but if you just think of data and businesses that have computers with lots of data in it, managing all that data gets to be very complicated. So many of the same technologies that we use that allow you to search the web in an efficient way will allow you to search the data that you have. Like, for example, you probably have a laptop and you probably don't know exactly what's in it because you've been putting documents inside.
I've got hard drives like that, Rico. I've got hard drives on my computers. They're so big, you lose things. Will we find these huge data houses offering to store our data almost for no cost? Is that where we're heading?
Yes, that's where we're heading. The idea that because you can store so much, now you have actually a risk of having too much data on a machine that could break, right? And storing that in the cloud somehow, so that you have a more reliable way to access your data. Or if your machine broke and you know you have copies of your document in a service, then you can pick up another machine and immediately have access to your information. So these services will already exist to some extent, and they will continue to expand to a point that even you can have, if you have more than one computer, they will be integrated through the cloud. So they're all connected to the internet. They're all connected through the cloud. You change something in your machine, then almost seamlessly the other one gets updated. So your data is kind of safe. It is safe in that way that it's replicated in many places.
Let's talk a little bit about artificial intelligence, because it's been talked about for many years. Some people fear it, some embrace it. Where are we going? What are we likely to see in this form of, in the next round of technology? Are we going to see things that are getting close to sort of almost knowing what we want to ask it?
Actually, yes. Artificial intelligence, it can mean many things, but in many of the things, you see things in a scalable way. Like, for example, today you're typing at Microsoft Word in a word processor, and today already if you spell something incorrectly or if the grammar is incorrect, it will tell you that. It will underline the words.
A very handy feature.
It's a very handy feature, but we're going to go beyond that. Imagine, for example, you're typing something that is grammatically correct, but maybe the style is not quite that good. And then Word will be able to tell you at some point, some little window will pop up and say, what you just wrote, maybe you would like to rewrite it this way, you know? And you can imagine, especially for people whose English, assuming you're typing in English, is not the first language, then a style checker or a style suggestion system may be very useful. And it will need to have additional levels of intelligence to be able to actually suggest good phrases. Another one is doing machine translation. We actually already have a site on the web with the preliminary offering via live search, but the quality of it will improve very much in the next few years, to the point where if you're trying to find something, we can actually search in pages written in other languages and bring the results to you in your language. With the website formatted exactly the way it was formatted in the other language, but then the text translated to your language. And other things you will see is that search today is actually very limiting because you have to open a window that has a particular website, let's say live search, and then you have that little rectangular window where you have to type words. And what you really want is not to type words. You want to find your information. Like, for example, suppose you're writing an article about biology and you want to write about kinds of trees and you want to talk about bushes. And if you just go type bush in search, you're probably going to get a bunch of results about George Bush, let's say. And that's not what you're looking for. And how do we know what you're looking for? The idea is that if we're in your computer and we know what you're working on, that can give us context to make those searches much more efficient for you, to the point where some of them will be implicit. For example, I bet it happened to you that you're preparing, let's say, a PowerPoint presentation, and you're typing some things, and suddenly you realize, I've already done a presentation just like that. I know I have some slides about that. And maybe they were blue or something, but, you know, I don't know where they are in my computer, and I don't even know how to search because it's a visual memory, right? Mm-hmm. But if we know the context of where you're working, we can actually have a window where automatically we're searching related information. So all the time that you're working on something, we can point you to things that are related to that. And maybe if all goes well, we will find that you already had another PowerPoint file with content very similar to the one you're working on. So those tools clearly will exist very soon.
And finally, Rico, PDAs, cell phones, iPhones seem to be the thing this decade. What do you think will be the can't-live-without gadget of the future? Or are we going to basically see the same sort of devices that we have now just morph into some other obscure device which is yet to be imagined?
That's a good question. We would like to come up with the magic device, the little box, that you reach in your pocket and you get the box, and the box does everything for you. And we haven't quite figured that out, so today you carry your laptop and you carry your Bluetooth headset and you carry your cell phone. Pretty soon your little carry-on luggage is full of boxes, right? Mm-hmm. And we're all looking into how can we eventually make that a one box, and that one box magically will have enough screen area, it will have enough interaction ability, so maybe you don't need such a big keyboard and still be super productive. So we are looking into those things and trying to figure out, can we bring the whole thing to the box, the magic box that you carry and you do everything with it.
Rico, good luck in the development of that said magic box. We look forward to it eagerly with bated breath, I suspect. And thank you for sparing some time for Tech Talk Radio. It's been very informative and been a privilege talking to you. Thank you, Rico.
It was a pleasure.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Recently on Tech Talk Radio, we heard Ben-Hur Castro from Seagate in the United States talk about the new generation of portable hard drives, which not only backs up your files with the push of a button, it also password protects the contents of your drive. Not only does the MaxTor OneTouch 4 Plus provide backups, data storage and protection for your files, it also protects your entire computer system in case of disaster. Now for the good news. Thanks to MaxTor, Tech Talk Radio has a 1 terabyte version of the OneTouch to give away to a lucky Tech Talk Radio listener anywhere in the world, valued at $299.
All you have to do is visit the Tech Talk Radio website and tell us in a few short words why you need 1 terabyte of storage. How easy is that? We'll announce the winner on air on Monday the 16th of June. So what are you waiting for? Visit techtalkradio.com.au right now and you could be the proud owner of a 1 terabyte, one-touch portable hard drive.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics.
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
What do you think of when you think of Garmin?
GPS systems.
Garmin earlier this year announced the impending release of the Nuva phone.
A what?
What's a Nuva phone when it's at home?
This is a fully featured Garmin GPS.
It's a phone, is it?
An HSDPA and GSM quad band telephone, which features a web browser, email, Wi-Fi connectivity, Bluetooth connectivity, a 3.5-inch display, and it runs Garmin's proprietary operating system.
Whoa.
It's multimedia friendly with MP3, ACC, and MPEG-4 support, and has a built-in camera camcorder.
So you can record yourself driving down the train tracks.
You can.
And driving off the
when
cliff.
When it gives you information to turn left at the next
very good.
Set of traffic lights.
And listen to some nice music while you do it.
That's right.
Yes.
Very good.
No suicide is painless or something like that.
Can it? Does it have GPP, genuine people personality?
I'm sure it does, because Garmin do GPSs very, very well.
They do.
So it'll be interesting to see how well they go with the telephone side
of it. I had
a
Garmin, it broke.
Oh, but did it work well when it...
Yeah, it was good when it worked.
Right up until the point where it broke.
That's right.
No pricing or carrier announcement has been made yet.
Hey, it'll be interesting to see what Telstra think of it, because you know what they told Apple about their iPhone? Go back and keep knitting. So it'll be interesting to see what
Telstra say to Garmin.
Really, did they say that?
I did.
Well, Steve Jobs wouldn't have been happy about that.
Notice Telstra hasn't announced that they're using the iPhone yet. So anyway, go on.
Indeed. So keep your eyes and ears open, www.garmin.com, for the Garmin Nuva phone.
Here it is, everybody. The world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio website of the week.
This is a contentious little website, which I quite like.
Zoho?
Zoho wasn't contentious. Zoho was tremendous. Yeah. This week's one is bugmenot.com. Bugmenot.com was created as a mechanism to quickly bypass the login of websites that require compulsory registration and or the collection of personal or demographic information. For example, the New York Times.
Yep.
Oh, I've heard about these.
Simply enter the domain name into the search box and the chances are you'll have a full page of login details returned to you. So
Sounds a bit chonky.
Well, it does sound a bit chonky, doesn't it? But it works very well. There was... Oh, Graham's typing in Tech Talk Radio. I didn't try that one. The one I did try that I'm always... I have to register every time I go to it because I forget what my user name and password is Driver Guide. We can get all the great drivers for various devices. So I typed in Driver Guide.
It's a generic one.
And I wasn't disappointed. It returned hundreds and hundreds of login details. The site currently has login details for nearly 194,000 websites. If webmasters are concerned that their site has login details listed in BugMeNot and they don't want them listed there...
Like I was just, yes.
They can report their site and any account details will be removed and the site in question will be blocked from future submissions.
Oh, very good.
BugMeNot also provides free anonymous disposable email addresses.
Ah, like good old Mailinator.
Like good old Mailinator. So this might be useful to you.
I like Mailinator. It's good
stuff. The Tech Talk Radio website of the week, bugmenot.com.
There is a fine line between genius and madness.
Missed it by that much.
I know nothing.
Houston, we have a problem.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
Somewhat topical given our discussions of eBay during the show. German police are investigating a couple after they allegedly offered their 8-month-old son for sale on eBay.
Yeah.
Renee Beck, a police spokesman in the Bavarian town of Krumbach, west of Munich, said on Saturday the 23-year-old woman told them it was only a joke. But he said police were nevertheless continuing their investigation and the baby had been put in state custody. The police spokesman says that she said it was a joke. That's not yet clear. Detectives are investigating on suspicion of child trafficking. Mm. A number of people called authorities across Germany after seeing the offer on eBay that read, "A baby, collection only. Offer my nearly new baby for sale because it cries too much. Male, 70 centimetres long." The opening bid was €1. There were no bidders. during the 2 hours the auction was running before the offer was removed.
Because it cries too much.
Said police.
No buy it now?
No buy it now, plus. The mother was quoted as saying, "It was only a joke. I just wanted to see if someone would make an offer. They've taken my son to hospital, and now they want me to take psychiatric tests next week."
That's probably a reasonable outcome.
Yep. Oh, there you go. That's the odd spot of the week on TikTok Radio.
An odd, odd spot.
Only out of Europe, I suspect, for things like that. Well, that could have happened in the United States, I guess. Anyway. All right.
Sadly, it could have happened anywhere.
You have been listening to Dr. Ron with the odd spot of the week there. Graham Callaghan, Justin Dunlop's in, and we've got a visitor in the corner who has been very quiet throughout the course of the evening. He's wearing a Tech Talk Radio cap, which I think is great, and I want one after the show.
Where did he get it from?
He just pick him up.
You've been to China, have you?
Pick him up online.
Yeah, good. All right, until the same time next week, it's been fantastic. It's been a fun show tonight, and we'll do it all again next week on Tech Talk Radio in your ears. Bye for now.
You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio, brought to you each and every week by a group of dedicated professionals from within the media, broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, panelists Graham Callaghan and Mark Diggins, expert opinion Adam Turner, and our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Post-production facilities courtesy of Evolving Communications. Podcast production by Graham Callaghan. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night at 8 p.m. from the studios of 3WBC. The crew wish to thank all the stations that take the show, including 3WBC and 3XX in Melbourne, Cairns FM, Switch 1197 in Brisbane, 95.3 Huon FM in Tasmania, Queer FM in WA, and Stop and Go Radio in the United States. For sponsorship and advertising, call 03 9018 9043 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.